Yo.
So yeah. Khabib straight said, yo, no Israelis allowed in Dagestan.
No Jews.
Israelis.
I'm pretty sure they said no. Find the Jews.
You mean no Jews?
Yeah, mean, no Jews. Or dogs.
That's crazy. All right, Robbie. Ranjit and Danny Pearls. It says,
what's up?
Is that your real last name? That's like a stripper name.
No, no. It is.
That is a stage name. And you, what a stripper name is, shouldn't it?
I'm going to dance to Rob Zombie.
Definitely sounds like one. I'm just saying.
I'll give you a pearl necklace.
Oh, shit. Let's tone it back a little bit.
Says the guy who called me a stripper name the moment we logged on. Danny Pearls, is that your stripper name? I was like, okay, that's the kind of podcast we're having. Okay.
Just talking? Well, what's the show about? It's about nothing. It's about nothing.
I just want these guys to know you got another thing coming, bitch. I'm still around.
We need the Punjabi back for, you know, some things are happening in the world. So
a world lesson.
World. Hey, how you guys been handling without me here? Like, geez, it's been like, I know Ranji tried to invite me on a couple of weeks ago.
Ranji's been leading the discussion and teaching us.
Yeah, that's when you would have got like sympathy from the world, but now no one gives a fuck.
Now it's
2 weeks in.
You had your chance.
A lot changes, right? You had the one
you
day.
You had your chance. We had our day of victimhood, and then now we're back to being the oppressors.
You had 6 or 7 days. 6 or 7 days?
No, it's been a bit more than that, right?
Nah, it's been like 3 weeks, 4 weeks now.
Oh no, you mean
when did we lose? Yeah, when did we lose victimhood status?
As soon as the bomb started coming down on Gaza,
like 24 hours.
I think all hell went down when what was it?
The hospital thing
is when it was like completely, that's when it was, there's no coming back.
That's when all hell went down.
That was last week. There, it was, I'd say a week before that started.
Oh,
public opinion.
Yeah.
When Piers Morgan
flipped the switch.
That's when
he went the other way.
Really?
When Piers Morgan said chill, that's when things started going the other way.
Mm.
If you can get Piers Morgan against you, you kind of like,
I don't even know what's Piers Morgan's position. I think I thought he was pretty balanced generally. He's like
he's pretty balanced.
I mean, of all other people, he's been the most balanced because he's been the one who's actually had speakers on from the other side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what? There nobody else is hosting speakers from the other side. I don't know. There's so much content out there right now. It's like mass information.
What's actually crazy is how much disinformation is coming out because you don't know what. Honestly, I don't know what's happening until I see a community notes.
Well, it's like, you know, I thought about that a lot. It's like, you know, I always knew that like Israel is like a sensitive topic for like a lot of people, but like you don't really realize how sensitive it is. People are like no skin in the game, like technically. No, not to say like, you know, there's the humanity skin, quote unquote, but yeah, like everybody's stoking, you know, they're putting their opinions like either, you know, you stand with Israel, you stand with Palestine, whatever it is, but like, holy shit, have we forgotten that there's a million Uyghurs in internment camps in China? Like what's going on there, guys? Or like, you know, 500,000 dead in Syria. Like, well, guys, you know, numbers, like the numbers game is like, there's a lot of other shit happening in the world. And then you're like, but this one really stokes tensions. There's actually a good video on like why it's the case.
Well, what's the concentration of cameras and just showing babies coming out of rubble is a tough one. Right.
Yeah, but like that's not the first time you saw babies out of rubble.
That's fair. It's just I've never been bombarded with it as much as I have now.
So why now? Why this one? Right. You got to ask.
Because the world.
There's many reasons. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's why. Yeah.
It's why.
We're both we're now the white colonial oppressors. That's why.
I think social media has never been as accessible now. Even like 5 years ago versus now has been a big difference in the way media is consumed. Because we still had gatekeepers 5 years ago, and like, who are people trusting? Trump really changed that. People stopped really.
So like China was like 2 years ago, right? And like, not really hearing much of that. A million people in internment camps, like that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but they also don't have anything coming out online, right?
Exactly. There's controlled media. I mean, who knows if the Syrian civil war started now and, you know, ISIS was starting now, would it get the same traction? I don't know. There's a lot of hate, man. There's a lot of shit going on.
But I feel like when ISIS and the Syria thing happened, that was pretty well covered social media wise. That was right around the time the Arab Spring stuff popped off. And then,
but you didn't see protests like this.
No, you didn't see the protests. The protests for Palestine is
bigger than anything you've seen.
That's probably bigger than anything. Arab Spring was really contained to just Egypt.
If I had to say, and Danny, this is probably what you probably think. There's always been like a boogeyman of the crazy Jew controlling the world and destroying Palestine. And now it's just easier to shit on Israel and settler Jews, right? So it's been such a long conflict, first of all. Like the conflict in Israel, between Israel and Palestine, has been much older than, I don't know, the civil war and unrest in Aleppo and whatnot, right? So
it's one thing, the civil war in Toronto, man.
History, a bit more documentation on it in as a body, okay, compared to other conflicts that you just brought up. So there's that is different. There is a layer of anti-Semitism, I'll admit, to a degree.
I'll admit. Thanks for the admission, Range.
Where it comes out. Like, that's the only way I can rationalize the reaction, right? Like, especially October 7th when, you know, Israel's still counting the dead and people are protesting and kind of cheering. And even like you see videos on college campuses, people are straight up calling for gas chambers. I mean, when it's not a joke, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. And then you see what happened in Russia last night, obviously.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as much as, you know, the average white Jewish guy can blend into the population, man, the world is stacking up against you guys, but this conflict is different, man. You can't just say it's apples and apples and say, you know, Israel Palestine is the same as, you know, I don't know, the regime in Syria versus like the rebels there, right? So
what's different about this then? Let's break that down, because that's a good point. Let's break that down.
I mean, this one's biblical, right? Jews and Muslims going to war again.
Well, there you go. That's the nail on the head here. It's not Muslims against Muslims.
And then at the same time, you know, this has been going on in New York since I remember. Like, I go back when I was in university, you'd always hear and see the videos on those 240p flip phone cameras of like people throwing chairs, and an Israeli speaker came or a Palestinian speaker came.
Yeah.
It was just war there. Like, I think the amount of exposure that this conflict has to maybe on university campuses here is more so than the Syrians. There's no Syrian student association. There's definitely Israeli student associations and, you know, Palestinian student associations and Muslim student associations. So I think there's like a lot more.
There is an Israeli student association. I'm sure they have more clubs than anybody else.
No, I said there is.
There is. You said there is.
There is. I said there is. I didn't say there is. But there isn't
that's a good point.
You know, a Syrian one.
Who's the Syrian is the Muslim Student Association. So who are they gonna? Who's their arch rival? Who's their nemesis? Who's their enemy? Fucking this guy. Look at this guy.
Hey, Arthur.
By the way, you know who's on the good side by who kills dogs? Those guys killed dogs in the fucking October 7th. They fucking killed the dog, man.
They shot the dog. Yeah, that was bad. Dogs, best animal, but
yeah, listen, man, stones
versus tanks.
Yo, but listen, hold on. So let's break that down, though. Here's the Israeli psyche right now, and the Jewish psyche, frankly. October 6th, there was a ceasefire. There was no fire. October 7th, it went down. That is, and I think this is a confirmed fact. I don't want to spew things unless I actually have them confirmed. So what is confirmed fact is single largest day of Jewish deaths since the Holocaust. That's a fact, right? So that sticks in your psyche. These people, we can agree, were mostly not military, right? And you can call somebody a militant resistance organization. That's the kicker of the difference. Do they attack purposely, intentionally civilians? That's what a terrorist is, right? That's what they do. They spread fear to civilians. And then the way they did it, the brutality, the sheer, which is, I mean, you know, we're, you know, people are having these debates on like 40 beheaded babies and all these like these straw mans where it's like, isn't one enough? Like, isn't one a problem, right? Like, you know, you get caught on like, you know, what's true. Well, it's true that they came in there. It's documented. They came in there and they slaughtered and in gruesome ways, innocent civilians, whether they be at a rave or grandmothers, and children and, you know, holding their parents that they would later burn the house. And so it's gruesome. So there's a serious trauma burn on the Israeli psyche. And we know it, the moment that happened, every Jew knew, it's like, okay, here comes the pro-Palestine protests right away before the first bomb is even dropped. We knew it would happen. And so this is not surprising because we've seen this rodeo before. And I can tell you this. Nobody's having discussions saying, oh, I can't wait for those Palestinian kids to be killed. Like, you know, nobody's excited. Nobody wants to do that. It's about like this fanatical desire. And it's a shitty situation. It's a shitty situation for Israelis, and it's a shitty situation for Palestinians, because we know that this is what has to, what's going to happen, and it's just war as hell, fucking brutal. Nobody wants this, but on October 6th, nobody thought this would happen, and on October 7th, it went down, and then things changed, the narrative changed. Now, I mean, you can have debates, legitimate debates about Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories. Like, those are legitimate questions, right? Like, and it's a legitimate debate, but like the psyche is not there. Nobody's talking. It's two separate debates going on right now. It's one is, you know, is the occupation legitimate, but that has nothing to do with retaliation, revenge, justice for what happened on October 7th. That's it. Nothing before October 7th happened. This is the response. And then the Israeli psyche and the Jewish psyche is removing those two things. Because ultimately, if you conflate the occupation and the validity of it, and these are legitimate concerns, like fucking nobody's denying you that the Palestinians are going through shit for 75 years. But I mean, no rational person would justify that as the reason for killing and slaughtering, massacring civilians, raping the women, you know, all these things that we would think or we all know are wrong. And if they stopped the military, if they just killed the soldiers and kidnapped the soldiers, that's one thing, right? It's like that's soldier versus soldier kind of thing. But then when you go into the towns and do that shit, then so now that everything changes. And that's the separation that we're getting. And it's a fucking shitty situation. It's only going to get shittier because like the strategy right now is to basically starve and get Hamas out of the holes, get them out of their holes. Apparently, I just saw today that they have months of stockpiled food and fuel for this moment for their fighters. And then you know, obviously the civilians have to suffer, but it's just suffering all around. Did it have to be this way? No. Why, you know, we could talk about this open air prison for 15 years and all these things, and then we can have counter arguments and all these things about that. And these are legitimate things to have, but I'm telling you that there is the only thing that's mattering for Jews right now is there was something happened on October 7th, something terrible. And then this is the response. That's it. And they try not to merge the two things. And frankly, I'll tell you this, Israel just doesn't give a fuck because, everyone's going to kick and scream and they're just going to do their thing. Because otherwise, two things will happen. Now, Israel intelligence messed up so bad. Like, how could this happen? This is like huge, huge, huge failure. Yeah, like, it was a huge embarrassment. Yeah. And like, and the investigations will come and everybody's asking these questions. But now, so that what do they have to do now? They have to believe even harder to prove a point. There's a point to be proven, which is even more dangerous. And unfortunately, that's what has to happen. That say that if you do this, this is what's going to happen, right? So there's a point to be proven. When you're proving a point, shit gets really messy and it can get really ugly. And like, oh, you know, here's what's crazy. You talk to these like people on Piers Morgan. Everyone gets mad that he asked the question, do you condemn Hamas? Like, I don't even know why that's a controversial thing, but apparently, you know, that's like causing controversy. And if people aren't saying yes, like this NYU student who got fired from her job, she was tearing down posters of Israeli kids. All these things are crazy. This is like, that's the anti-Semitic part. Is like, you can't condemn a people that massacred kids and women, rape women. Like, you can't condemn that. it's not a hard thing to say. I condemn as a Jew. I condemn the loss of innocent life as a result of bombs. Of course, I condemn it, but I condone the necessity of rooting out Hamas. Is it justified? I obviously, like, you know, that's such a difficult question because, you know, fucking kids in rubble, like, that's terrible. It's terrible to see that shit.
Obviously, I'm more ignorant than the three of you in this topic, but, you know, clearly we're calling what Hamas did as a terrorist act. Let's not even question that. It is what it is.
Nothing to debate there.
Let's move on from that, right?
Right.
Okay, so
that's a crazy thing. Everyone's debating that.
You know,
right?
and we defined it killing innocents, killing civilians, and not going after military targets is a form of terrorism. At what point does the response become a war crime on the response of not on the part of the Israeli government? There's a point where you can't just drop an atomic bomb on everybody.
No,
there's a point.
So we can agree that that is too much.
Well, I'm just saying there's a point where the world just goes, whoa, hold on. Right. Like, I, you know, 9/11 happened. They went in. It's not like they just dropped bombs on everybody because the world's watching. Yeah, they're held account. But it seems like it's basically the attitude here is fuck you guys. We don't care. And this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the visceral reaction that you're getting from these videos now and saying, OK, well, innocent life is innocent life. Like, that to me. Right. It doesn't matter.
We're all bad here, right? Like,
kids are kids, right? So, if we're talking about military target, is there a better way? Is there a better solution than just bombing the shit out of them?
Actually, I want a question.
So, like,
sorry, from what Robbie said, this has been called Israel's 9/11. And when 9/11 happened here, I don't know, we're most of age of remember having vivid memories.
16,
You know, we were mature enough. When 9/11 happened, at what point were we okay with the responses versus when we're like, because eventually the world did kind of turn on America and said, look, time for you to get out of Afghanistan. It was more just an attrition thing, but they never had the protests against the Afghanistan stuff like they did
in Iraq. I remember when they went to Iraq, there was massive protests.
Iraq was the one where they were just like, what the fuck are we doing here? Afghanistan,
Go after military. I mean, that's the difference, right? Like, clearly, even videos, obviously innocents died. I'm not questioning that. I don't think I'm arguing that they were righteous. I'm just saying the majority of what was shown to us, at least from our psyche standpoint, was two armies facing each other. What we've been showing
Taliban was an army, or Taliban and Al-Qaeda wasn't really an army.
But then they're a terrorist group, right? So they're armed and they're not civilians, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, what we're exposed to. I'm just talking about what the psychology is, that what we're exposed to is you had army on one side and armed militants on the other, terrorist, whatever you want to call them. But in this case, what we're exposed to is a government, a powerful government, bombing, and we see children dying. So that's where I think now that reaction is there a better way?
They show you children dying. They also show you Hamas militants among the children dying. They don't show that. The world shows that, like, it's not... This is a terrible situation because you got Hamas embedding themselves. Look, here's the best part about Hamas. You can do this and then come back and be among the civilians, and it's a win-win because you literally profit off showing death to the world. And so they know this. This is their game. And we talk about the hospital thing and all this is like the mass media coming in there and they play this game. We've played this game before. This has happened many times before. 2 years ago, we were having this discussion I was on this podcast, right? And then, about Ukraine, and you guys were asking me about, you know, the Israel-Palestine at the time. I remember it was just 2 years ago. So it's like a continuous circle. Hamas wins when the world sees that their children die. That's how the media sees, oh, dead kids. And people have already long forgotten about October 7th. And look, what's the alternative? How do you fix this? I mean, the guy from the Young Turks, I forgot his name, Cenk something. He said, no, he's a Cenk something, a Uyghur. I don't know. He's the guy who had the Young Turks. Anyways, he says, he was the only guy on the left that I saw that answered the question. Peers asked him, so what should they do? And he's like, send your special forces. And to, you know, for to his credit, he actually gave an answer. Now, look, it's easy for us sitting here in these rooms, you know, the comfort of our homes, to be judging, send your special forces. Well, you know, maybe they don't want to, right? Maybe that
yeah,
maybe
they'd rather going to be destroyed. The special forces on their own are going to get destroyed. And to be fair, guys, like the 9/11 comparison doesn't really line up. It is in the sense, fine, yeah, it is, you know, Israel's 9/11, but we all felt, I remember feeling, whoa, vulnerable. Like, dude, people can come get us in Canada, right? You know, CN Tower could be a target. Downtown Toronto could be a target. Like, someone can drop a plane there. And when America went into Afghanistan, first of all, they did a lot of aerial bombardment before any soldier actually touched the ground. No one questioned that shit. No one asked about, oh, how many targets are soft targets? How many targets are military compounds? We saw bombs in Afghanistan.
But that's, like, but that's, it's what we were shown. I'm just, I don't want to say, I'm not arguing the significance of what happened. I'm not downplaying that. I'm just saying, it's what you're asking. Well, why is there mass protests? I'm like, it's the psychology.
And, but then no one also gave a fuck about questioning in that first couple of months either here, because at that point, you know, we as in Canadians and Americans felt that one. Doesn't matter what color of skin you were, you still felt it. It was an attack at home, right? So the boys are getting things done when they're going into Afghanistan. No one questioned until, oh shit, we dropped a bomb on a wedding to get one, you know, Al-Qaeda guy. That doesn't make sense.
But remember, social media at that point was not.
Exactly.
You know, everybody was in a cameraman, right? This is different now, right? It's a different world.
Yeah.
Think about the workplace. Everything is different now. You walk with so much caution in what you do. And I'm just saying the psychology here at play and the why you're getting that reaction is, or the narratives being painted of like, this is, they're guilty and you're innocent, is that it's what you're exposed to constantly on social media, right?
Like
I agree. Thing. There was a terrorist attack. I don't think any of us are disagreeing with that. And
well, that's the thing. A lot of people do.
That's crazy.
That's what's going on here. It's like either there was the fear of the Jewish community is that people are finding ways to either A, deny that it ever happened, or B, justify that it's right. And then when you're like, okay, so then that reinforces, you're like, all right, well, listen, if this is who I'm dealing with, this is the other side, then now Israel is more important than ever, because this is why it was created in the first place for a thought like that. So you're running scared. And then you know, the community is like, it's together. It's united. But nobody's going ahead. Here's the thing. Like, you know, I want to go back to the fact is like, there's so many legitimate debates. It's such a complicated thing. And I know on the Palestinian side, they're saying this is not complicated. This is oppression, but you know, this is complicated and right of return and population transfers, refugees. Don't forget Israel in today's day is an advanced, highly advanced developed economy with in a democracy that is a fully functioning country. It's not going anywhere. Like, it's not like you're not getting rid of it. You're doing massive retransfers of populations to your old, you know, ancestral homes based on 1940. But all these discussions are moot because there's one event that happened, and this is the cause and effect that happened, and that's it. And so we got to narrow it in that regard. Israel didn't unilaterally start bombing. They did it in response to an attack. Now, whether it's proportionate, whether it's justified, there's legitimate questions to ask. But what is the root cause of all this? The root cause is not farther than a couple of weeks ago. And if we go and look farther than that, then you're just asking for, you're never going to get to agreement because you know, people bring up the Bible and everything.
And you're saying we can't solve a 4,000-year-old debate? Is that what you're saying?
not in the context of one podcast, I mean, but maybe two.
I mean, I think we were all pretty much on the page of after we did that podcast that there is not, I think we all predicted what was going to happen to Gaza. We said it's going to probably not exist by the time, because that was the most,
we also said, you know, there's going to be beach resorts, Israeli beach resorts after they flatten Gaza, and this is a land grab.
Protests were happening before the first bomb was dropped. Like, they were right out in the streets, and the pro-Palestine was happening before the bomb was dropped. People are ripping off pictures of kidnapped kids. Like, this is not politics. There's no, I stand with Israel. Israel isn't even mentioned. There's a picture of a kid, 5 years old, and people ripping it down. So that's like that whole psyche of universities thinking that like this is normal or like this supports the occupation. It's just a poster of a kidnapped kid. We can all, you know, you would hope that humanity has a sense of what is right and what is wrong. And for people to tear up kidnapped kids because that supports the occupation, like what the fuck? Where are we going
right now? So has anyone commented on, like you said on Piers Morgan, he had someone who was ripping off posters from New York. Did they actually have any response to? Because I haven't heard any. I've seen videos of them ripping off posters and stuff, but I haven't heard what the reason is or what they think they're accomplishing.
So you can follow this account on Twitter called Stop Antisemitism. That's the account name, and then they have a tracker of all the instances that happen and people getting confronted, and you know sometimes they ask what do you want, why are you all ripping down the picture of the kidnapped kid, and then the most common response is like, this supports the occupation or this fuels the occupation, which is fucking nuts. So you go there and you're like, well, if your baseline is thinking that a kidnapped child is supporting the occupation, just like, hey, you know, bringing awareness to a kidnapped child, then like, you know, it's hard to have a debate with someone so entrenched and someone so in the views of Jews inhuman, because, you know, like, look, I don't even know how, there's so much disinformation, but I think it's quite established how gruesome the fucking things were. I've seen the videos. It's fucking barbaric, man. This is animalistic behavior, and they were, you know, they were out there to bring actual terror, because this is what terrorists do. You can't fight fire with flowers, and you know they have to do some really hard things. But I'll tell you one thing: I have full confidence that there is no policy of the Israeli government that says how many kids can we kill today. How many civilians can we? It is an assessment of every bomb drop, saying what is the
collateral damage.
And
that's the word that I hate.
It's the word, like the punishment.
It's kill some kids. Yeah, I mean, that's like, yeah. We're all parents, right? Like that's I think that's where it stems from. I mean, the more you see it, the worse it is. I think it is easy, but war is ugly. No, I mean, like you said,
wars help. Wars help. And collateral damage. But I'll tell you one thing: the goalpost of what is the acceptable range of collateral damage, pre-October 7th and post-October 7th, that's where I could see there being a change, a more of a willingness to cause collateral damage. Because, what is the end game? I still don't know what the end game is. I know there's no desire to reoccupy Gaza. I think that's a terrible idea if that happens. Hamas is out. You're in this vacuum now. Is somebody even worse than Hamas, if that's possible, going to come in, right? But, you know, I think right now the Israeli psyche is, fuck it, we'll deal with it, because we don't care. We have to get hostages back. We have to, and that's really lowest on the totem pole, I think. Right now we have to get avenge and make a point. They have to fucking prove a point, and that is the hardest thing to do, because that you want to make a point, you cause a lot of damage.
As you're proving the point, you're helping Hamas win the PR battle online, right? Because their PR battle
to who?
But it's not even online. It's in the UN when you know you have a Palestinian speaker speaking, and then you have the.
It's a good point,
right? It's not just a PR UN. Battle going.
So do you remember why I said Israel stopped giving a fuck? Israel stopped giving a fuck about the UN a long time ago. When Iran was head of the Human Rights Council, things like that, when there was more resolutions passed against Israel than any other country combined, Israel doesn't give a fuck about the UN. Israel gives a fuck about the place where it can get money, which is the US, which is firmly on its side for multiple reasons. From 9/11 to Christian Zionism to all these things. The US is not going to stop supporting it. But also, then there's a question is, who's Israel worried about, you know, pissing off us sitting over here in the West in the comfort of our homes? Or is it more important to prove a point to Iran and saying, if you try this, this is what's going to happen to you? And I think that they'd rather, you know, make our hearts bleed for the Palestinians than risk being socked to Iran and Hezbollah. That's when I say prove a point. It's like, you know, hey, sure, hate us. You know, we don't get to go to Dagestan to an airport there. Oh, Crimea River. But, you know, it's better to do that and make Iran scared of trying to attack us, because they just were exposed a big weakness on that impenetrable wall. That wasn't supposed to happen. How the fuck did that happen? And now they have to show them that, like, if you try this, all hell will break loose. That's where we're at right now. And that's the biggest tragedy.
When you say the wall, which wall are we talking about?
the like secure the fence between Gaza and Israel. That fence is supposed to be impenetrable. Like, they invest in technology, fucking guided machine guns.
Aren't the missiles there as well? The Iron Dome or whatever it is.
Iron Dome is for the missiles. Yeah, but I'm saying,
how do these gliders get through?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know how they did. You know, well, the answer
on October 7th, yeah. I woke up to Shinda sending me tweets of guys coming in gliders. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a
video game, man.
They overwhelm the Iron Dome with 5,000 rockets, so Iron Dome's busy, and these guys take paragliders, and then they also broke dancing bulldozers. There's so many fucking failures at. And don't forget, like, Israel was also distracted. You know, before this happened, there was a huge, as any democracy, having left versus right protests, right, about the Supreme Court reform. So they were busy doing what any, you know, Western democracy does, and, you know, having, these are the biggest protests in history. So anyways, we don't know this. We're all speculating, what was Israel doing to be out the bunch? Fact of the matter is, it happened, and there's going to be heads to roll on internally. But right now, everyone's like, let's just get rid of Hamas, get Hamas out of power. Say that's a win, whatever that win is, long term, who knows? And then we'll deal with the leaders who all fucked up, who all shit the bed, and this impenetrable intelligence system. Anyways, point I was trying to make. My wife's gonna kill me right now. But
I just want to comment before you leave, though. But you know, when we talk about this, from that, we speak very high level, like one country, like a game of Risk. You know, we're moving little, we're seeing the pieces, but the root cause of it, we still have like 7,000 dead on the Palestine side, 600 dead on the Israel side.
The root effect, what happened,
the disproportion. Like, there is like
the human... root cause is a whole separate podcast.
No, like,
we
can
go back to the Bible and everything.
But like, when we start, when we,
yeah,
a lot of times when we talk about it, we zoom out, but when we zoom back in, the numbers of who's actually getting punished, journalists dying, you know, people attending a rave dying, this stuff happens. Yeah. And then I feel like we disconnect, or there is a problem of disconnecting from it. No.
So I want to wrap that back to my original point, was like, we're so focused on this, and this is tragic. Like, the children dying, I think, ask any Jew, this is a tragic situation. And contrary to what other people are saying about, you know, on the other side saying, you know, it's justified what the resistance did. As a human being, like, it's fucking, it's sad as shit, man. It's your fucking kids. So I think there's a human aspect of it that you know, no Jew will be telling you that this is, I'm so happy we're killing kids. Fuck no, man. Like, none of my friends would say that. But you mentioned the number 7,000, and look at the world uproar. I'm going to take you back to where I started this, which is Syria. Civil war was 500,000 people.
Yeah, Syria was fucked. And I know it didn't get near as much attention, but Syria was fucked.
But why?
Especially with
half a million people.
Because it's
China is literally keeping a million Muslims in concentration camps, man, in internment camps, a million people.
Because
like right now,
it's a different battle, man. It's sticks and stones versus guided missiles. Like,
Syria didn't use guided missiles. The difference here is guided missiles.
Yeah,
democracy protest that Assad used jet planes on and chemical weapons on. Not sticks and stones.
It's a complete mismatch.
No. I feel like Syria was pretty fucked, but there wasn't eyes on Syria that.
But his point is about the numbers. His point is about the numbers.
My numbers. My thing is, now that we, you know, regardless of why we're watching it. Everyone's watching, and at some point, it's kind of like, all right, you know, they're in tunnels, but bringing down the buildings doesn't really seem to be affecting
the tunnels.
Do we know that?
No, I've seen more than enough.
The spray foam is the baddest weapon I've ever seen. Have you seen that? They just put the spray foam thing and it just seals the tunnel.
Oh, no, like, I have not seen that.
It's all over the internet. These guys are throwing some spray foam
product. Like Spider-Man shit? Like, you know.
it seals the tunnel so you can't get out of it on one side. It's like they're going after ants. I'm like, okay, that's pretty badass.
I guess where I'm coming from is it just feels like the bombing of the buildings isn't... You said earlier that, you know, they're killing the Hamas people in there and then they're not showing that on the videos. They're just showing the kids. But is it actually having a net effect on the thing? And I guess what this leads me to is, what was Hamas's end goal here? Because friggin' three dumbasses on the internet said, yo, Hamas is fucked, Gaza's fucked. There's really no coming out of this.
No question.
You know?
Exert maximum damage and avoid the rest of the Arab countries forgetting about the Palestinian cause, which they were doing. Saudi Arabia was about to normalize the relations with Israel. which would have been a watershed moment in Israeli Arab relations.
This is still going to happen, I think, with Saudi Arabia. I don't think Saudi Arabia cares too much.
I think so too. It's just a pause. Ultimately, in the long game, money's money. Money talks. Technology talks. Security talks. You know, which Israel has security. Saudi Arabia wants influence, and they want to build up access against Iran. There's so many reasons. The fact of the matter is, with Hamas's endgame, good question. Good question. Because you got their billionaire leaders in Iran, in Qatar right now.
Yeah, and I commented publicly that I think that's pretty fucked up that your people are done and you're out making press releases and kind of, you know, nonchalantly talking whatever you want to talk. But if you're not in the, out there with them, what's the point?
How convenient. I know, man. Well, it's a good thought. Listen, I got to run here, guys.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you.
I hope you all become staunch Zionists, like you should. And then no, I'm just kidding. It's just take a step back, see what's going on here.
All right. Final question though. This is something that's you brought it up. Kind of is being. Do we conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism? Are they intertwined as much as some people make it in?
Because it's latent. Anti-Zionism is refusal of the right of Israel to exist, the whole river to the sea thing. Criticism of Israel policies doesn't at all make you an anti-Zionist. And frankly, there's a world where you look at the Venn diagrams of like anti-Zionist, anti-Semite. There is a small, I guess, possible theory where I don't believe Jews should have a state. I don't believe Israel should be created. But Jews are okay. But if you look at the statistics on who that would be, and you get just go dig deep, you got very small proportion of people would say, I'm cool with Jews, but they shouldn't be entitled to self-determination. And you look, the Palestinians deserve self-determination too. I think I'll say that. I think an occupation clearly is not a good status quo. Most Jews will tell you that, but ultimately, yeah, anti-Zionism has become anti-Semitism just because of how the population has started reacting with it. And you don't even need me to say that. You clearly see that yourself in the protests transition to gas the Jews, which we saw, like, you know, that happened in Sydney, right? That's why it's like, it blurs. Theoretically, you could be anti-Zionist and be not anti-Semitic, but it's such a small proportion these days. And that's the fear of Jews. I know, you know, like.
When people say anti-Zionist, they're talking about not kicking out Palestinians out of their homes and saying, my ancestor lived in this house 7,000 years ago, so it's mine now.
Yeah, I think that's a very simplistic view of what happened. And I think a lot of shit happened in that time, and we should have a podcast and talk about that. Because yeah, I think it's worth a discussion. But look, you guys know very well what partition does, right? Like, let's be honest. There's mass transfers of population and mass tragic deaths, and it's never a fun situation, you know. But look, that's the history. Colonialism shaped where we are, right? And you don't just dismantle states because you're upset about what happened to your great grandparents. You know, this is like, that's not a way forward. You know, being stuck in the past is not a way forward. And if you want to perpetuate victimhood, then it's not going to get you anywhere. There's a path to a Palestinian state, and it doesn't mean bringing all the Palestinian ancestors back into Tel Aviv. It's not realistic. It's just not going to happen. But anyways, listen. Let's
all right, have. I know how it is when you have any kids. You got to go. Thank you for taking the
time. All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, man.
All right, guys. Bye.
All right. Cheers. So, what's going on with Pierre?
That's the transition.
Worst segue ever since then.
Talking about bombing, how's Pierre doing in the polls?
Oh man, what happened to PP this week? Your boy.
I don't even. Was it this week?
Man. He pulled up Piers Morgan.
Hold on, what was this week? You got to refresh my memory. What happened this week? Because there's been so many.
Was it last week?
It was last week. Yeah, he was basically kind of shitting on Trudeau about how he handled India and said he went too hard on him. Basically taking India's side over ours.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. Now that I'm caught up on it, and thank you for refreshing my memory, what I want to say is PP's a pussy. All right. That's what I want to say on it. It's kind of weird. So The weird thing, I don't know, you guys remember when Jaskaran was on, he talked about how PP refused to get clearance on the security thing so that he didn't have to speak truthfully on it. He wants to be ignorant about what's going on with India. He wants to be able to go to these, what do they call them? The Dandiyan things.
Garbas.
Yeah, he wants to go to the Garbas and be like, hey, India, I want to pass this Hindu phobia bill that, you know, the liberals just won't sign off on. What a crock of shit, Hindu phobia. What the fuck is Hindu phobia? It's six again who bear the brunt of Hindu phobia, more or less. I don't know why they're trying to... Anyways, PP's a pussy. What, where do you want me to go with this?
You kind of justified it, eh? Like, you kind of justified why he's doing it. Oh, he is a pussy, but he has a strategy behind it, is what you're saying.
I told you guys, you didn't have a back. I called it out, what, months ago? That this guy doesn't have a backbone. I guarantee you he's going to flip-flop.
I mean, yeah, but all politicians are. I mean,
yeah, but he does it to another level, man.
Yes. But so does Trudeau.
He stood up in the parliament, agreed with Trudeau. Then the next day he did a press release saying, oh, I don't have all the details. We'll have to wait to find out the truth. Now he's saying something else.
This Niger thing, 100%. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, like he's just going all over the place.
He's going to.
And then this week he tried to distract by bringing an anti-vaccination bill again or whatever it was that he was trying to, you know.
Hold on, what's the anti-vaccination bill?
And he's
great.
Gone.
Great insight. Thanks. What's this anti-vaccination?
I don't know what it was, some billy, whatever he was going on about. It's like getting away. He's just finding things to rile people up. There's no like substance there. So this is what he's going to do.
So there was I think before all this, even, I don't know if it was before, but we had that Apple video. You guys, how about them apples?
Yeah.
I didn't really watch it, but I heard the fallout about it. Yeah.
I mean, the video is him eating an apple. Pretty shallow. Being a prick. I don't know everyone said it's a journalist was trying to interview him, and he was like, hey, so you're very, populist, very Trumpian. And he's like, how? What does that mean? Show me. Like, he was just kind of very bluntly trying to counter this guy's points to show that he's just following trends in his speaking points and not actually backing them up, which to some end, how prepared are you to like actually back up everything you say based on that time? Like, if I saw a politician be like, hey, remember you did this? When did I do that? Last week? No, one time. Fuck, I didn't know I was going to be interrogated. I'm just trying to ask you a question. I thought this was an established fact of events, right? And then the liberals countered his video by actually playing clips of every time he said something. Because one of the things he's like, I've never called anyone a leftist. And then they bring up like 200 clips of him saying leftist, these leftist policies, this leftist shit. And then
could he lose?
No. I think so.
I think so, man.
And this is where I come around, is conservatives are infamous for hanging themselves. They get enough rope, they get enough of a lead that they just are like, oh, we're winning. Yeah, and then they just start dropping race.
If he doesn't win by a huge majority, like if he doesn't blow the liberals out of the water with the amount people hate Trudeau, and if somehow Trudeau pulls out a minority or whatever,
What's a conservative minority look like? Is that a win for Trudeau?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
you don't have full power. Yes, 100%.
I can only defend my boy PP to the end that as soon as Trudeau said fuck India, I was like, boy, I don't care what happens, I gotta vote for you now. You know? My politics is really basic. I keep it really simple. The second Trudeau stood up to India, I was like, my hands are tied. I can only vote Liberal or NDP now.
Justin Trudeau isn't the bother.
I mean, I don't go that far, but at the same time, I acknowledge this, you know, as a Sikh, I feel like one party is willing to have my back somewhat. Even though there's 7 years of neglect, there is something here.
That he started high and ended high, right?
Just in general, he stood up for a Canadian getting killed on our soil. Put all the other politics aside, why is PP so scared to do that? It's a very simple question.
Because you got a turban and brown skin and a beard.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Right.
But yeah, so that's where I stand on PP. Any other questions, ladies and gentlemen?
Okay, but if PP... Jagmeet's obviously not going to win, but if PP gets, minority government, and then it's the liberals and
Look, I'll go as far as saying that in the past, if I knew the Liberals were going to take the seat, I'd vote NDP. I do still have loyalty towards Jagmeet for being a Sikh politician and being a leader. But
if he's out after this one, though. I think if he loses.
Dude, he just re-won the party nomination. They just held the whole convention and he won it.
Wait, how much? Seriously?
A lot. Yeah, he killed it. Bro, there's no
NDP.
Other one.
Bro, it's NDP. Who keeps track of these things?
That's
shocking. He ran against them, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. It wasn't a leadership convention. It was a party convention, but what policies are you going to go for?
Policies, and then confidence in the leader type stuff comes up, and then he got that.
Right, really? Nobody brought up a no confidence thing. Yeah. So
I mean, no one's like, hey, we don't like you, we want someone else. Favorite.
So they really think he has a shot?
No, but they realize no one else does either.
It is a bit of a
Now's the time, man.
It's not about...
Everybody hates both of them. Now's the time to bring in someone they like.
Nah, I think NDP are just so far gone. Look at what's going on in Ontario. Like, could you even name the leader of the NDP?
No.
That's where we're at now. We don't even know who the leader is, so... Look, the NDP is not getting a seat.
We know who Bonnie Crombie is.
We do know Bonnie Crombie. We know Doug Ford. This is a 1v1 battle right now.
We knew Doug Ford.
All I'm going to say I get accused of this being a liberal Homer podcast is I still unequivocally support Doug Ford over Bonnie Crombie.
Why?
Why not? What has Doug done to make me...
I'm just asking you why. Why do you support Doug Ford? How much more do you need?
What do you mean, what more do I need? What?
So Doug has been all right.
Doug's been good. He's literally been governing from the center, where we want a liberal government too.
Yeah.
Except the Greenbelt debacle. Look,
he's been all right.
Listen, Greenbelt debacle aside, he did what people wanted. He gave up the Greenbelt. They're like, give it back. He's like, all right, fine. Oh, you gave it back. You like, what the fuck? Okay with the Greenbelt going too there, because there was a piece of whatever land on
the... I just want to rewind back. I don't think the tide in the community has really turned against PP though for taking this side over ours. I don't see it. I don't hear it. Like, it was a watershed moment. I like that word that Dan used. It was a watershed moment. Just like when there were like 20 MPs that were Sikh elected. That was a big moment for us. Canadian Heritage moment. And then, you know, when Canada, or when JT announced in Parliament that, yo, there's foreign interference, India had a hand in it, that was a big moment for us. And it should have been a rally, but it's not. But
hold on.
It's under the radar, man.
You know why? Something else happened in that meantime that kind of distracted us.
What?
The Nazi in Parliament.
No. I'm talking about our community. No, I'm talking about our community. I'm talking about when the Liberals, you know, had that report, the terrorism report, you know, Boz and all these other media outlets that focus on Sikh Punjabi issues, they didn't like have one post about it. They had editorials. They had people coming on talking. WSO had their podcast on it. Now we have, you know, a huge watershed moment, a huge moment where Canada and its security agencies for once are like, yo, these guys aren't crazy fucking tinfoil bug guys. They actually have a point. There's something going on. And we're seeing a major party that's poised to win saying, yo, you know, we need to be nicer to India. Like, give them some slack. What we're doing to them is we're going too hard. You should either take it as a slap in the face because they don't really think you're actual Canadian and it doesn't count and it's a foreign issue. Or it's somebody who is acquiescing to a different power where they shouldn't be. It's either way, it's a slap in the face, but there's no fervor, there's no uproar. It's one post, a couple of messages on Twitter and that's it. I don't see any uproar. It's shocking.
One, I think, okay, so I agree with, I think the war between Israel and Palestine right now is just dominated headlines to the point where it almost feels like you could say whatever you want. Everyone's scrolling past that to see, you know, which building got bombed or blew up. There's just no competing with that story right now. I'll say this much is I still have a lot of DMs and conversations with people about what's Pierre doing, how bad are they messing up when stuff comes up. Like when the Garba thing happened. Is it Garba? I said it straight, white guy. When that whole, there was a video that someone released of him in private that didn't get like shared around. And I asked someone like, you know, is this getting posted somewhere? And they said, yeah, there's a few other videos, but it's just being paced out. You're right. There hasn't been a huge, let's vote out Pierre. We're never going to vote conservative rally by the community over this. You know.
Yeah, I mean, where's a town hall in city of Brampton where we hold our conservative MPPs or candidates accountable for the takes that their party's taken against our community?
Okay, yeah, like the terror report, there isn't that.
To
that degree, did you know that there was a WSO event in City Hall just yesterday?
Yeah, I know about Juggy. Was that it? Is that
yeah, brother. Yeah, it was. I was expecting you to say no, and then I'd have like a gotcha moment, but you took that away from me, so. Clearly, this is why you're the lawyer and I'm not, because I didn't think this through. But like at that event, they talked about Pierre and like politicians and like the sick politicians on both sides not listening. Like it's something that did come up. It wasn't, you know, when they were doing Q&A, someone asked like, how do we hold our MPs accountable to go after this kind of stuff? Why aren't we not hearing?
They're politicians.
Like when sick stuff happens, sick politicians are very slow to tweet. When Gaza-Israel stuff happens, they were, you know, we're here. And it's kind of like, what did the party whip allow versus what people are allowed? When this whole Gaza, like, you have Muslim MPs or pro-Palestinian MPs who are willing to get removed from their party over the stuff they believe in, whereas we don't have that within our community, I feel like. And I think a lot of the focus isn't so much on, you know, we have PP against us, it's why don't we have our MPs for us? Has been this strong focus.
Maybe we don't elect the right MPs.
Yeah, that could be a part of it.
I mean, you know, if you're saying that's one of the makeups they require or part of kind of their character, maybe these people just don't have it.
And then
you can't expect the world out of people. Maybe they just don't give a shit. Collect the 200K and go home.
And I think another thing is this issue something that resonates with these MPs? Like within our community, I still think this is a bit of a controversial thing, because I know even on this one, there have been.
What on they're controversial on the killing?
On the Nidja thing and the votes, I still hear people sometimes give justification on, look, we don't think the Nidja thing should have happened. He shouldn't have died, but they're like, we got bigger Canadian problems. They don't like, this isn't something that they want to adopt as. Ooh.
But who, like our own community or like within the general? Like, yeah, but then I think that's ridiculous, because the general intelligence community, or at least when the discussion comes of a foreign power operating on our soil, then maybe the other general Canadian population is taking it further. There is general concern, right? Everybody comes in like, why are the order killings on our, you know, extrajudicial killings, whatever you want to call it, on Canadian soil? So we should care, not just as Sikhs, but.
Like
the general vibe, like, I got, it should be a bigger issue for everybody, like for not even our community, right?
Like the general vibe I got was,
but it's become an issue for our community.
But I think the general community was is like, yeah, it's bad, but I hope this doesn't affect my visa.
Yeah,
did the government of India take an L by opening the visas up again?
They didn't take open up the visas. What are you talking about?
They're open.
No, it's only for entry visa or business visa. It's not, tourist visas aren't open.
Other tourist visa? I thought they opened it up again.
Tourist visa is not open.
No?
What's an entry visa?
Oh, what's the difference?
It's like transit, right? For transiting or something like that. But it's not tourist visa. So no one's going there for weddings or wedding shopping anytime soon.
I thought they opened it all up again.
Nope. Conferences, business, that's it.
Smogums?
Commerce. You can fact check me all you want.
I'm not trying to fact check you. I'm
trying to read what you said in terms of the entry visa, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, man. I feel like, okay, so I do agree with
Sorry for trying to edumacate myself, Ranjit.
I do agree with you. There hasn't been that uproar against Pierre or the Conservative Party as there was during the terror report thing. I think there has been coverage, though. I wouldn't say there hasn't been no coverage. I think the news cycle right now, even within six circles, is just focused on other things happening around the world.
All right, so he gets a pass.
I don't think it's done yet. I don't think it's done yet. I think this is still pending, and I think this is something that people are noting. And they said the election's still a few.
Yeah, we do we really care about community? We still love Trudeau even after that blackface stuff came out. We're like, that's okay. It's happened in the past. It's fine.
I wasn't offended by it though. That's the thing. I wasn't offended by it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's been so many things. You're like, yeah, whatever. It's okay. You know,
him dressing up like the genie.
Like, yo, he can shit on us all he wants as long as he lowers interest rates.
Yeah, I mean, did you guys see that?
Because he really has the power to do that.
What the average person thinks that, man.
No, but do you see what the Bank of Canada said? Where they said, look, if you really want inflation to come down, they got to get rid of the carbon tax, 16% drop right away. Alberta.
What is it, 16% drop? What?
You'll see a 16% drop in our current inflation rate.
16%?
That's the number I saw. So don't quote me. I didn't read this in actual paper. This is what I saw as a headline.
Okay.
It was basically because Alberta now is opting out of the carbon tax, and they're getting an exemption by Saskatchewan is saying they want to follow suit.
So Bank of Canada says this is good or bad?
Bank of Canada is saying, listen, carbon tax is really what's driving up inflation right now. This is the one thing that the government can do to help. It's not all on us, because I think the Bank of Canada has really just been like, look, you guys keep shitting on us for raising interest rates, trying to deal with inflation. Do what you can do, which is, one, stop spending, two, kill this carbon tax. That's what's really hurting us.
I mean, I can see it being part of the problem, not hurting us on its own. I mean, carbon tax driving up energy costs, but it's not driving up, I don't know, like...
Driving up energy costs?
Payments, car payments and shit.
But it's all related, right? Like, energy costs goes up, everything else goes up.
Yeah, it's definitely part of the problem, for sure.
It's not like they say, you know, get rid of the carbon tax and you resolve inflation. It's, here's a way you can... You make a dent that's not on just us.
That's true. That's fair.
The carbon tax, when it applies to Canada, is kind of weird, because we're a cold country. We're a country that needs heat in the winter to stay afloat, to stay like comfortable, right? And we're a country that everything is so far away. We need to commute. We need to move. We need to actually, like, these are things that we need to do. Truckers need gas to move product. Carbon tax and what it accomplishes environmentally, I just don't think add up. I think it's the tax that hurts us in all ways and doesn't help in any.
How does it help?
Well, the notion
I know nothing about, I'm being honest, I know nothing about the carbon tax.
So, I mean, the notion is you put a carbon tax on, you get companies to use less gas and produce less emissions because now they're mindful of the costs. You know, people don't go on joyrides, they buy less cars, which to a certain degree, it may have helped push electric car sales a bit.
But do those tax dollars go somewhere?
No, it's more punitive, I feel like, than anything. It's not like those tax dollars go into planting more trees or anything.
So that when they say spending money, they're not using the tax.
It's not going...
The carbon tax to fund other projects.
There's a new, like,
rebates.
There's a rebate check that we get. Yeah.
Oh, there's a new one. I don't know if you guys know about the electric pump.
What?
Heat pumps?
Heat pumps.
Yeah.
So right now our heaters and everything run on gas, and there's a huge, I think it's up to $7,000 rebate you get if you put a heat pump outside. It retrofits, it's kind of like an AC heater all in one that runs on electricity.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, we're probably going to look into it because it basically pays for itself. The rebate covers the cost of install. So.
Interesting. I've been looking into heat pumps for a while.
I only learned about it last week. I was like, what the hell is this? They're like, yeah, instead of using your gas to heat, you get like an AC unit that's a heater, and it's an AC unit in one. I was like, all right, how much is it going to cost me? Next to nothing, because your rebate covers it. I was like, well, I like that. Do it.
Are you getting it?
Yeah, we're probably going to get it before it gets too cold, which it's starting to today.
It's just for your water? Sorry, I missed that.
For your heater.
Yeah.
Oh, so for this entire house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it replaces your furnace?
Nope. It's an addition to your furnace.
Addition to your furnace.
So basically, you'll still have gas to kick in if, you know, the heat pump's not producing enough. But the theory is that it will kill your gas bill by more than 80%, 90%.
But it works on electricity, obviously.
Yeah, so your
isn't electricity more expensive than gas?
No, gas is way more.
Really?
My Enbridge bill is way higher than my electro bill.
Yeah, but we'll all go up with like the EVs and all that, right? Yeah. But electricity is still cheaper, and it's renewable.
Gotta love our nuclear power plants.
We need more.
I'm telling you, man, it's the one thing keeping me alive. yeah, anything else happening in your lives?
You know what? That's about it. The first part of this podcast was pretty heavy, man, to be honest. Yeah. That needs its own, like, decompressing. PP, Dougler.
PP was, like, yeah, it wasn't enough.
Well, it's not enough. It's definitely not enough.
Segue couldn't have been worse.
Yeah. I didn't see you guys putting any suggestions out there.
Well, maybe I thought we were going to decompress and, like, take in.
Yeah, talk about a little bit. This guy just...
Yeah.
I mean, we just finished talking about it. I didn't know how much more we could have said that we didn't already. That war is kind of fucked.
I think that's the same kind of conclusion we came to last time. There's no end answer. There's no right answer. There's no conclusion.
At the very least, let's talk or realize where we are in the timeline. At the start, it was like, the last week or last podcast, it was like, okay, Israel's going to go ham. Hamas probably expected this reaction. It is what it is. And today we're at, okay, Israel, I get why they're doing what they're doing, but it hurts their sensibilities, what they're doing. Even though it's been done by so many other countries, right now we're seeing too much of it and we want it to stop. That's where we're at. So the PR tide is turning against Israel.
I'd say it's turned. I don't even say it's turning. I say it's turned.
It's turned.
It's turned.
Yeah, it's turned. It's turned. Before, you know, people like, go check on your Jew friends and neighbors. Now it's like, fuck them. That's where it's become.
I didn't get to ask him a question, though. You know how, like, we're talking about the cancel culture that's going on? Why is, like, I'm just generally asking you guys, why is posting the Palestinian flag or saying, you know, if you're doing it for the innocents being killed, and why is that justification to get canceled by institutions? And, like, why does that mean you're it doesn't mean you're pro-Hamas, right? If you're protesting and if you're out there, like, there's this whole cancel culture going on there where, like, institutions or people are going around saying, okay, this person's pro-Palestine, fire them from their job, X, Y, Z. Does raising the Palestinian flag mean you're pro-Hamas? Like, I'm really confused.
Part of me is loving this because I feel like you're crying so hard. You tread so carefully over this.
I'm just being honest.
But, and then us not jumping in makes him just, like, figure out whether or not he said something that we're crying.
I am ignorant of this topic. I'm just being
honest. I think it's definitely, like, what you say. If you're saying, you know, think of the Palestinian lives lost, you're not getting canceled for that. You're not getting canceled for the flag. But when you're saying stop the genocide, like, one side is committing genocide, the other side isn't, when you're taking a side, that could get you canceled, especially in this debate.
How about if you say free Palestine?
That too.
To his point, don't they have the right for self-determination as well?
Right. But what does that mean, free Palestine? Because free Palestine, if you, in Hamas's take, is no Israel.
No, not in Hamas's take. I'm just
sea, right. That can be free Palestine from the river to the sea, right?
I see what you're saying.
And it'll be free. So
we're not talking about the little strip. We're talking about the entire.
Qualify, right? Yeah.
That's a dangerous game.
It's a dangerous game.
That's a dangerous game.
Yeah.
Say the wrong word, get your whole career shot. Yeah, that's a.
Well, I can get canceled, but can't fire.
I don't know if it fucks your career, man. I feel like that when we started
people lost their jobs at Goldman Sachs. Well, they said stupid shit, I think, right?
I think a lot of it is, it just depends on. Look, I think if I was a hiring manager or I was a CEO and I had. How do I say this without jumping on it? If I had someone applying for a job and on social media, they're like, yeah, KPS Gil's my hero, That would, if I was of any ability or in any power, I'd be like, no, fuck this guy. He's not working for my company. I don't want this guy here. You know, if I had any sort of influence, I would openly say that. I have none. So whatever. I might be working with a bunch of people who work.
You know what we can talk about is the Sikh or Punjabi online population or presence and their takes on this. I don't like it. And we talk about I don't like it when we get boxed in, like Sikhs are for Palestine or Sikhs are for Israel. No, I mean, there's aspects of both that speak to our history, our values, but like there's no one fucking side.
I mean, there's no ethnostate in our human
Palestine. I think we're for humanity. For
Israel. We are for
humanity. Like, the only skin we have in the game is humanity.
But there's also like sovereignty, the issues of sovereignty that we should be able to understand and respect and even relate to a certain degree.
But who's right? Like now that's going to get a
sick kingdom by
sovereignty?
We didn't get a sick kingdom, right? By simply saying, "Hey, look, we got some parents here, so we're going to draw a line in the sand."
So there
was some sovereignty. There was some viciousness.
I just don't think there's a solution to that. It's ugly on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, he brought up the partition. It's just funny when you think of it because both sides thought they were right. They were sending trains full of dead passengers back and forth to each other saying, well, he's the devil. And it's like,
he said it on purpose, that fucker. He has knowledge of our culture. Yeah, exactly.
But there's no end to it, right? It's not pretty. Yeah, he did that on purpose.
And I mean,
you guys know partition. It's like, fuck.
He's got us. He got us.
I still feel like our biggest L was not saying we want our spot.
But the war crime thing they have to answer for at some point.
To who though? That's the one thing I've come to accept. There is no one responsible for to answer this.
Dude.
The UN has no impact on any country.
But then the US can't sit on its mighty horse and then say,
it will. Blah, blah, blah. It is. It's going to. They don't care. The UN's not going to hold the US responsible. Putin is the one who called them hypocrites. China called them hypocrites. And what does that mean in the end? Nothing. Mm. It's just like, okay, yeah, we're hypocrites. That's it.
It's rich coming from those two countries, right?
No, but like, no, but their whole point is you guys keep trying to tell all the other countries when they're crossing the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, here you are kind of giving a free pass and still, when Biden says, hey, I don't trust any of this stuff, I don't know. And everyone else is kind of like, all the other countries, they're not just getting their news from, you know, TikTok. They have their intelligence agencies. They probably know stuff and what's real and what's not. Yeah. And when they're the ones wagging their finger, I just feel like the UN has once again proven that it's impotent,
useless,
and just a nice kumbaya. Let's send overachieving kids to New York.
What's crazy is like it's crazy. Like a lot of countries start talking about the humanitarian crisis, and you would think on a world stage, a country would be like, "Yo, shit." Yeah, everybody's judging us. Let's chill out. Let's chill out for a second. It's just like fuck it. Like, bombs away. Let's go more, right? It's like,
look, Danny had a good point, though. He's like, are we afraid of world perception or are we trying to prove a point to Iran? They're like, I get that.
But what's their end point? They're saying end Hamas. What does that mean? Demolish Gaza. Right? Like, what's the end game here? So you're gonna go and destroy that whole area. You think those people are going to be pro-Israel now?
No, but if there's no one left...
Those million people that you have there, you think they're going to be very happy with you as their... Like where does the psychology go?
Well, no, but listen, it's easier to deal with...
Systematically going after Kharkus and anybody related to Kharkus, anybody who could look like a Kharku, kind of turned the tides against Kharkus and their perception in Punjab.
Yeah.
And how much acceptance they had in the community, right? Mm. Love. So it's not like there's a playbook there. There is a playbook there where this does work out.
I just think you're just breeding a whole new generation of hate.
And there's that too. And then they all move to the West as refugees, right?
Exactly. And
they're not living there. The people that are left living there cope.
No, but the people left living there are half of what was angry at, you know, it's not a million people who hate you now. It's 500,000 because half of them are gone. So,
yeah.
There's a population fall going on somehow, right?
That's fucked up here when you say it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to say it as it is. I don't know how to really sugarcoat that, but The population is dwindling. It's.
I wanna segue to another organization that might be inept, and that's the Akal Takht.
Oh, I thought you were going after American Sikhs again.
I don't even know how to start this one. I'm already on edge.
Well, they recently passed an edict that no weddings in halls or
destination beaches.
Destination weddings.
I know where I stand on this. I can argue this now that I know exactly.
No gay weddings and what's the third one? Interfaith. No interfaith weddings. Those three things, like this is a big thing, pissed off a lot of people, a lot of dumb people, a lot of smart people.
Did you just call me an idiot?
It's in this I'm
called somebody an idiot, but you could be the idiot. Let's see what your take is.
All right.
So Shinde, give us the religious take on this.
I mean, I've always thought beach weddings are kind of cringe. They're cool aesthetically for a little bit. I think too many people started doing them and then it kind of became, okay, what's going on here? The reasons why people do destination weddings are twofold. Sometimes it's to just get good pictures. Sometimes it's, you know, the wedding industry and the amount of money that it costs to do a wedding here. Let's go and save some money and do it there with, you know, less people. It's easy to justify taking fewer people when you do a destination wedding. The religious sentiments of it, one, people don't feel like proper sadaqat is always provided.
What does that mean?
It means you're on a beach where a bunch of onlookers in their bathing suits are literally 2 feet away, just watching and gawking at it, which, you know, alcohol's on the same premises as that this wedding's happening that you're being modest upon. There was a ban on doing weddings in and taking Marasroop to like big halls where alcohol was allowed years and years ago, like early 2005, I want to say. That stopped the Nagar Kirtan from happening downtown in the capacity that it was at that time. I've never really been a big destination wedding person. I've heard that, you know, that's not the case for all destination weddings. There are people who take extra care when they hold their destination weddings to make sure that there's a higher level of reverence provided. And some pretty dominant Kirtanis and well-known Sikh influential beings have gone there and said, no, things were a lot better here. It wasn't an alcohol-driven wedding. That said, I mean, the Alo ban on destination weddings, it's something that's been brewing in the community for a while now. We've seen TikToks and people kind of saying, hold on, why is this still happening? There's this one guy who kind of capitalizes on these destination weddings. There's a reason a lot of people don't jump into this because they know that there is it's a sensitive thing for a lot of people. So, yeah. So I'm not against or surprised. I want to quote Nate Diaz. I'm not surprised at all by any of this.
Go around, I want to see your view.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm pretty comfortable in my views. If not my lifestyle, but in my views, yeah. I do get it. You know, there's years and years of biadbi happening, like somebody standing 5 feet from the balki, having a brew, watching a bunch of people get married. And, you know, we wouldn't allow that in a gurdwara. While we sacrifice the sanctity of our traditions and our beliefs just so someone can have a nice backdrop. That's what the pre-wedding pictures are for. Just do it that way, right? It sucks because going away for a wedding is kind of a nice change. And having a smaller wedding and a smaller venue is great. So there is something that is being sacrificed, but it's for the greater good. Overall, it's a win. The other two things we can discuss, and then I have an overarching like argument again. Why is this all stupid, anyways?
Though. Hey, lawyers, because they're leading you down a path and trying to build up enough of a case that they're like, haha, gotcha. And I'm like, and I really just don't see it right now, which is driving me crazy, but I know it's coming.
Yeah, well,
my view of it is that you want to just get married here and just go and party. most people just view a wedding as the party anyways. That's, I mean, that's just the reality of our weddings now. That's where the high price tags come from. So why don't you just get married here, jump on a plane the next day and go.
And to play devil's advocate, I mean, why isn't anyone just going to the party bus parked in the parking lot and
drinking
beers?
That's always my thing. If this is such a serious issue, ban those party buses.
I think people are now becoming to catch on to it. I think for a lot of, so I think
no, everyone's known about those party buses for years, man.
So here's where I say everyone. When I say everyone, I mean social media. When your weddings were, you know, contained within a small group that people wouldn't see a lot of the stuff, people in the UK didn't know how big the destination wedding craze was till it started really popping off Twitter and social media started retweeting it. People abroad and on Twitter, and I say this openly, don't realize just how big of an issue this party bus thing is. I'm not going to go and take photos if I see it, if you know the people or friends. I've had friends who you go to their wedding. I wouldn't even say they're close friends, but sometimes it's acquaintances that you respect enough that you're not going to go and blow up their scene and be like, dude, what the fuck? Right? I feel like we've all seen Instagram stories right after the wedding. And like, dude, I'm not going to screenshot this shit because I don't want to be a scumbag, but...
Yeah, but then don't be a scumbag. That's the whole point, right?
Right. Like, yeah, no, what I'm saying, what's going to happen is someone's going to be a scumbag, and maybe they're not a scumbag because they'll be seen as a hero for this, but they're going to publish it and report about it. That's going to cause this outrage.
So here's, just like in India, right? Like you have these marriage palaces, and you have a good daughter off-site. Why can't they just do that in Mexico? This is just me...
They could.
Go get married at the Gurdwara in Mexico City.
In Mexico. Why don't they make another one local to the resorts? If there's six resorts, make one there, and you've just solved everything.
Yeah, you know, and resorts might... Deal, right? If this is enough of an income driver for resorts, maybe they do that. Maybe they do a marriage, like cross-denominational marriage facility area.
Well, isn't that what happens in Punjab, where the Agal Takht is from? They have marriage palaces. Where they have one section where people go get married and everybody else just chills at the hall.
No, but they go to the Gurdwara, and then the Gurdwara is like right beside.
Which is like, it's right beside. I mean, that's just an argument now.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that culture of this resort, and it's already taking place in Punjab as well, right? Fine, not the actual beach, and I agree with that. But everything else should just be separated.
Yeah, but separation, right?
There's still separation. I can agree with that. So that's what I mean. Is that the solution, just to have a separate building?
I feel like we're spreading ourselves real thin. As far as party buses, and when we say this is being done to keep Satkara Maharaj at the wedding, and then we look at all the other BRBs that happen, I think we should stop these party buses. And look, Gurdwara have banned wedding promoters. Not promoters. What do they call them? Wedding planners.
Planners.
So the wedding planner is not allowed to come into the Gurdwara and start dictating stuff. Your planner basically is like, this is the time you guys have to be there. I can't do anything at the Gurdwara because committee guys yell at me. I'm not allowed to like be up in center with my clipboard, you know, telling you guys stand up, sit down. The Gurdwara has just said no wedding planners in the Gurdwara. Even though, you know, they're there, they're just not there with their clipboard at that time. I feel like Gurdwara are moving as much as they can without pissing off as many people as they can, because they are like,
can we just say from a basic standpoint, it's a big revenue generator, weddings in the summer.
It's what keeps a lot of them.
It keeps them alive, right?
There's certain Gurdwaras that rely on this, right?
Certain, all of them in Toronto.
Dixie would be fine without it. Malta would be fine without it.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if regular Sangat would be okay.
They have general Sangat that comes for regular programs. They're not
just... How much on a wedding? No, it's 24...
sustain its size without the wedding industry.
No, I'm just saying like 2,400 for a wedding now, right?
Different.
And some of these places are...
Let's just be 2,500.
Some of these places have 2-3 halls going at the same time.
I mean, no, yeah, Dixie does, but like in some cases... For the Duggies, that's really where they make.
And now the weddings are seeping into Fridays and Thursdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah.
So it is we can't ignore what it is. It makes a huge money. Revenue generator. It makes money. Let's not be stupid about it. So you're not going to piss off everybody. So, you know, but at the end of the day, I agree with you guys. What the wedding's the wedding. It's this whole party and everything else that gets involved, and I think there has to be separation of the two. Right. When we say we can't wait for wedding season, Ranjit's just ready to go to the hall. He's not ready to be there at the Gurdwara for the millennium shit.
I do go to the Gurdwara, not for the
millennium. You don't care though. That's not the party.
Look, there's definitely things that we need to take back and put control on. But honestly, at the same time, a lot of times the grunty will be telling people, you know, don't stand up now, everyone stay quiet. People don't listen. There is a level of whatever. We're here. We're in control right now.
Like the shotgun stuff needs to stop.
Yeah, it should have stopped. Sometimes people don't
know shotgun.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, now it's gotten to the point where the Gurdwara have realized that people are still going to do it regardless of what you tell them. So what they do now is they just end the wedding, take Mara Sarup away, and do Sukhasan right after. And then they're like, all right, now yours, you know, Sukhasan's happening, whatever, do it.
The whole Sangha should follow.
Or just do it in a hall.
So and close the hall, but close the door hall behind
room, yeah. And then just do it there.
I'm telling you, the Gurdwara have gotten to a point where, and this is something I've observed while being at certain weddings, while covering them, people generally, I've seen photographers have to help people and tell people what to do in terms of, no, you can't do that. Don't do that. Who like enforce Mariada more than the Granthi or the Raggis around do.
Because the Raggis are pretty messed up.
I think all do it on their first attempt. Maybe some of them had a second attempt. By the third attempt, they're like, look, we don't get support from the committee on this. We don't get support from the Sangat on this. What are we doing? We're just, if no one really cares. And I know there was a group here who was kind of like trying to do a Sadhkar committee type thing where they were going to weddings and trying to like help enforce stuff. They got kind of run out. It's just kind of like,
wedding crashing.
I'm just telling you, people.
Okay, so look, there's two other things that they passed. So no gay weddings and no interfaith weddings.
I feel like the gay one isn't going to get that much attention or that much controversy from a lot of people. I think, you know, even if you're really progressive, you're just going to be like, look, that's just how it is right now. It is what it is. We're not going to, I don't think that shocks too many people.
Mm-hmm.
Interfaith one, we could go into that one. I feel like that's where your big gotcha moment that you want to really go into.
It's not. It's actually not. But go into it.
So interfaith was a big thing in the UK. That's where they had the sit-ins, and we had a podcast on that one years ago when a lot of that was happening. And I said, look, crashing people's wedding for the interfaith stuff, that's cringe. Don't.
But yeah, when did we become about conversions? I'm just asking, like, when is that and when our big thing?
Well, it's always like a sick wedding should be a sick wedding, correct? Like,
but why can't it be between someone who's like I wouldn't consider myself a sick in the context of, you know, what they are kind of identifying everybody as. So I don't, what kind of faith am I?
And I think,
but I still show up. So isn't like, are you saying interfaith or interracial? No. Like where are you going with that?
I think basically they're saying, look, we don't, and this is having been part of an interfaith family wedding not too long ago. Mm-hmm. The general consensus I got from the committees, even when we were discussing this with them, was, are you guys going to do two weddings or one? If one, and I see another cottage, cool. Second question, is it a girl or a guy? If it's a guy, they're more down with it because they see that as someone coming into the faith. Yeah. Whereas with the girl, they see that as someone leaving the faith. And generally, it just came down to, and I think those were the two big things. I don't see Gurdwara here changing that too much.
That's weird, though. It's come from the UK because you were required to do a Christian wedding for so many years. You had to have two weddings, right?
Yeah. He even here, too, for a while.
In the UK, that wedding is not considered lawful.
Or wasn't.
Or was. I don't know. Maybe it changed. Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the history of that kind of stuff. I can't imagine that lasted into the 90s, did it? Really? So you had to get like a bishop to like sign off on your marriage.
That was your actual wedding. Going to the court register. I don't know what it was.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'd always have two weddings. It was a big thing.
Yeah. I never knew about that part of the history.
That's what's so funny if that they're the ones pushing this two wedding narrative.
So I do know there was a general thing about that. And I've always said, listen, if two people respect Maras and they respect Barney enough and you know, it's full Sadhkar, it never really bothered me. The argument was always kind of like, you know, non-Jews can't have a Jewish wedding. Non-Muslims can't have a Muslim wedding. You have to like adopt or kind of agree to the faith to hold those. So why are we lowering our standards to just allow everyone who wants to come in? And
I think they got to reevaluate what the barrier of entry is to even get married. I mean, like, look at all our guys. I don't think any of them. Look, like, what are you basing on? You were born into a family, all right? That doesn't mean like.
Look, traditionally the Nand Cottage was between Amritadi 6.
Mm.
And I think what's happened over the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years is the definition of who is a Sikh has broadened to the point of, are you Punjabi? Yeah, you're a Sikh. Yes, is that? Yeah. And I've had this talk with people, and they said, look, if you know, you're in trouble, or if like your default faith is to go to the Gurdwara and not to go to a church, more or less you are a Sikh to that point.
Fair enough.
So
I guess, and as your definition of Sikh changes as well, person to person.
So, and I think a lot of right. people would agree that, you know, the definition of Sikh of a Sikh has been watered down. You being as self-reflecting, self-affirming, and self-aware, pointed out that you don't consider yourself Sikh. Miss Jyoti K.
In the traditional sense of what they're speaking about.
Fair.
You know, but then you have adhering like, to, and here, so for me, I would say in my definition, I am.
Yeah.
Right. From my perspective of what I think, that's fine. But in terms of what the Akal Takht's expecting, I don't think any of us are.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at is like they're putting this out there, but then how do they define that?
Not that high, man. Like Shinda would be a Sikh.
Yeah, but if a Gora is like, I think I am too. Yeah,
actually, it's ironic. I would say shooting myself. It's ironic that I say it, but I don't think taking Amrit is a high bar. It's just not for everyone. I know. It's fucking ironic that I'm saying it. I can't believe
it. Should just take
I just feel like I'm going to get messages. This is what I'm like, shit. I'm going to get pinged about this. And then I got to...
It was a 2-1 on that.
I don't think it's... it shouldn't be seen as a high bar by Monday. Monday see it as a high bar. Let me clarify. Yeah. Okay. It shouldn't. It's a starting point for many people, but you know, to Shinda's point, like Anand Karj, it may just make sense. What's being said, what's being read, what's being done, the act. It all makes sense if you are sick and you're following, and your belief system lines up with that, right? For many of us who can't even understand what the Bhatti Singhs or the Ragis are saying, then it just becomes no better than a two gore getting married in a gurdwara.
I feel like if you don't know when to stand up or when to sit down or when to meditate, or I think that's when it.
But there's a solution that we've talked about multiple times, and it would just apply. It'd be another money grab for these gurdwara, but you make one universal course. This is the Anand Karj. This is what happens on that day. This is what you have to know. And it forces everybody to attend, come to, on a weekend, to spend 4 hours, 5 hours, and have some things sign off. Maybe even you'll pay extra and not even attend the course. But at the very least, there has to be something that's required.
He's already thinking of the payoff.
I know what the shortcuts are, right? But if like out of 10 gurdwara, like 6 enforce it, especially the big ones, then it is what it is, right? Like people are going to have to do the course. So then it doesn't really matter what faith group you are. If at the very least, if you're going to marry your Punjabi girlfriend and she wants to have a Sikh wedding because she always wanted to have a red, what is it?
Linga.
Thank you.
Send you something red you didn't.
Yeah, a red linga, you know, then, you know, you do it. You take the course. You understand what the fuck you're doing on the day of and what it means to people. And what the faith is saying, and then it shouldn't matter to you too, to a certain extent. And you do it. Then at the very least, you know, okay, fine. I won't bring the cold shots in the bus. I'll wait till I do my pictures at the park.
That was very specific. Cold shots.
I thought that was just a code word for beers. Clearly that's a brand.
Someone who's partaken in this event or has been a lot of experience.
Never.
No, right? He's the type of guy that says, listen, I don't condone this. Pick me up from across the street. And walks over.
I'm not drinking in the Gurdwara parking lot. But yeah, I mean, you know, just having that basic level of understanding the decorum required,
would
eliminate a lot of these problems. It would even eliminate like the problems of the destination weddings. If people at the very least, before they were allowed to.
There's an understanding and respect.
There's a basic understanding. Oh, okay. like, you know, this is what's happening, it would raise the level. And you make people pay $200, $400 per person. In the grand scheme of what they're spending anyways, that's a drop in the bucket.
You know the thing about the destination wedding, though?
Put a money value on it.
Here's the thing about the destination wedding. Say people are just like, look, yeah, we're not going to do Nand Cottage. We're not going to have like a Mara Sarup. We'll do it to a steak. We'll have a poti there. That's kind of, you know.
Just get married here and go there and play dress up.
They'll still get their photo ops. They'll still be able to
get your photos and call it a day. Like, man, people think too much.
I can still see people working around this. Because that's how the gay and Nand Cottages that have happened that got highlighted. Their defense was, look, we don't have Mara Sarup here. We did it to a poti sahib and, you know, it wasn't a traditional wedding. It was more of a ceremony. We didn't say it was like the proper Nand Cottage ceremony that we're thing. But
well, what
I mean, you can't stop two guys dressing up in the garb and having justice of the peace and getting them married.
No. That's the wedding in Bathinda in Punjab.
Yeah, which is kind of wild.
Two girls got married. So that's what triggered this. But here's my gotcha moment. I don't know if it is, but nothing's going to change because Akal Takht has no way of enforcing anything it says. Gurdwara are going to allow it no matter what because no one's there to stop them.
Who's going to police that?
Who's going to police it? That's what it comes down to.
You get onto the resort. The resort
no
police.
No one's going to stop Dixie from sending a Bharti Singh to someone's house to perform a wedding because there's Mara Sarups in many people's homes. They're going to do these weddings. There's no shunning. There's no, you know, their powers are extremely restricted. So what's actually changed other than a bullet point or a news flash out there about what they want? They have no power to enforce it. So who gives a shit?
I think to that end, there are people who do give a shit though. And I think that right, if we do see things that are really blatantly abused by people of note, people of influence, we'll see, you know, they won't be able to do it because they know there's going to be community reaction to it.
Guys like Jimmy can't do.
Yeah, they won't be doing the destination weddings anymore. And Ragis, you won't be able to have a notable Ragi come and do Kirtan.
But no one's stopping that one guy in Mexico does all the weddings. No one's going to stop him.
No. But he's going to say, listen, fine, I won't do it to Mara. I won't take a Mara Sarup no more. I'm going to just do it to a poti.
I honestly think just said people are going to get married here and go there.
But I think
they're just there for the pictures, man.
But I think when we talk about weddings here, I think we will, when Biadvi gets up, we do start seeing people saying, hey, you'll start seeing protests at weddings. Just like they happen at the UK, I think you'll start seeing them here.
Chalo, I'm not bombshell.
Take it easy, boys. Thank you for another pleasant week.
See you later, guys.
Cheers.